The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello, halflings! How are you all doing today? As always, I am Jasper William Cartwright, and with me is...
Leander Onatti Lewis, y'all, but everybody calls me Onatti.
And...
and Jeremy Cobb, but some people call me John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Nah, John.
His name is my name, too.
It is.
Oh, my God!
You will come to terms with your own weakness!
Old Prince vibe?
Focus on your task!
Yeah. Just shut your mouth. No one is interested.
You think this is just a game?
But suffer and learn.
Let's make them even more black.
We're about to get into something real big now. Maybe the intro will just be John Jacob Jingleheimer.
Oh, can we do the Recess version? Have you guys ever seen the show Recess?
Yeah.
With Robert Goulet singing
like John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
His name
is my name too.
I love it.
Yeah, it's so good. I feel like I'm gonna have to put that in there now.
Recess, by the way, for anyone who hasn't seen Recess, just go watch clips of it on YouTube. That
yeah,
was
Recess
was
such a good show.
What
a joy,
show.
And the movie as well. Literally, like I remember watching that like almost religiously. That movie,
yeah,
like I was obsessed with it. It was so good.
That movie legitimately made me sob. The first time I watched it, the end of it, it was just so happy. And then when Let the Sunshine In came on, I was fully sobbing. I was ugly crying. I was like 10 years old, but fully sobbing. Because it felt like, I think the phrase that I kept saying was like, that's what it means to be a kid. Little Jeremy was hit. That movie hit Little Jeremy like a tank, man.
Also, for our audience, we got sent. Jeremy was lovely enough to send us some pictures of little baby Jer Bear, and
oh my god,
he's like a full little man. It's so cute.
He looks so vexed at life already.
Everything,
already.
Everything is angering him, and he is like, why have you got this camera in my face?
Why are we here?
I hated having photos taken of me, and my parents kept taking me for photos. So there's all these photos of me just frowning at the camera.
Literally, like, there's
to smile.
Full blue steel in some of them.
So,
you're that angry.
So annoying.
There's one photo shoot, I think I was maybe 8 or 9, that I legitimately refused to smile. And I'm wearing, like, a little army fisherman's hat. I think it's the cargo shorts. Yes. I think that was the one. And I'm, like, leaning against the wall with my arms folded, just fully death glaring the camera. And that's the entire photo shoot, is me just glaring at the camera.
And what you don't know is he actually managed to do 4d12 of psychic damage to the guy operating the camera during that moment.
He retired after that.
Yeah, he left, and he's now living in a monastery, just contemplating his choices in life.
Yeah.
God, I forgot. I literally forgot what my Fridays were like.
You forgot the chaos.
Three black idiots.
Two black idiots and a relatively normal halfling.
I blame her. I say she's an enabler. She's an enabler.
Yeah, she is. Because
I am an...
No. you are, because your reaction to our stupidness is what I find funny. Do you know what I mean? So therefore, you enable us by being. By having a reaction. You just
I wouldn't
to
make
us.
So many jokes if you didn't laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And hearing you squeam.
I can't help laughing.
I blame
laughing.
You for finding us funny.
No!
It's your
how
fault.
How am I? That guy.
You're not just going to straight walk out of one of these recordings one day.
Peace,
no, fully
I'm out.
Quit.
Peace.
She starts like scream crying as just fully.
Like, what are you doing? I had enough of this job. You keep making fun of the jewels and my laughing and my squeak.
she just screams and leaves.
No, but you know what? I don't. Oh man, it was like last night when I was telling you guys about when I watched Jade doing the show, and she'll just throw the headphones across the room, and all I'll hear coming from the headphones is like, and I'm like, what is happening? What demon has found its way into my computer? And it's you Nazis. Honestly, like, thing is, we genuinely always joke. About the Unati making weird noises on this show and like the sound of her clinking jewels. But the amount of times where Jade will go, like in the, because she writes me like written notes, like what to do. And like the amount of times the note will just be, not sure what Unati's doing here. Because then I'll listen back and on your recording, it's just like, and I'm like, what the f-?
Like, what? She's contacting the mothership.
It's really fucking disturbing.
I'm sorry.
It's like you've just.
Unati
it's like you just
is
totally
Scarlett Johansson's
out.
Character in Under the Skin.
She just starts unzipping herself. Like.
She fully unzips her body. She gets even blacker. Like, her actual body is even blacker.
Her actual body is just a shadow. Like,
yeah.
I get absent-minded, okay, and then I make
it's
sound.
It's so funny. It's,
I fully no, support you. I fully support
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we
this,
are. It's so glorious.
I'm Team Unati and Team Jade at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. Team Jade's eardrums.
I'm so sorry. Ooh, let me. On that note, I'm gonna drop the gain a tiny bit. Just get it down to a nice...
Hashtag raise that gain.
A nice
raise
green
the gain
level.
We will record if our Patreon if gets maxed out, we'll have Unati record an episode with her gain as high as it can possibly be.
Jesus. And anyone that can make it to the end of the episode can become like an honorary, like you can just come and join us. Like,
yeah, you get to...
You understand the pain.
That's not good.
We have to show proof of your bleeding eardrums.
Oh, that's not good for anybody. Look after your ears.
No, we enjoy it. Yeah. I enjoy the bleeding eardrums.
Did we have a question to get to?
I think we had a question to get to with this episode. So we got sent in a question from Lord... let's see, we've done the thing now.
Errol. Lord
Errol. I can't... okay. So we got sent in a question from Lord Errol Rich Jr. of the Newlands of York. So thank you very much, Lord Errol.
If you're actually from York, York's a lovely city.
York is a lovely city.
I've been there several times.
Although I wonder if it's a play on New York. Anyway... Could be. So we
also
got sent in this question.
City.
Also a lovely city. Never been there. Hope to go one day. We got sent in this question by Lord Errol a little while ago, and it was about having listened to Wiz of the Rings, and he was kind of interested because there was a YouTuber that he quite liked called Brian Brian Seeker. Is the YouTube video, and it's about recasting X-Men. In the Marvel Universe is what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And there was quite an interesting question raised about the nature of Magneto in the current MCU. Mm-hmm. Because he would have to be like 80 years old. if his origin is in the Holocaust, during the Holocaust, he's a child. And where we're up to now, which is like 20... Are we in 2020 now in the
we're
Marvel 2020. Universe?
I think we are, yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
Oh, no,
like,
no,
you know,
we're ahead of 2020, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we are.
Because the snap happened in, like, 2018 or something?
Yeah, and then I think we went forward, like, 5 years. So I think we're, like, slightly in the future. Either way, Magneto would be about 80 years old for his origins to be taking place in the Holocaust. And Lord Errol sort of was saying, brought up a really interesting question about what's like the best way of tackling this, because he felt like in the video the guy sort of just sort of skated past the idea of using the Holocaust and felt like it should be kept in because it's the origin of the character. And I personally have some slight misgivings about the idea of using something like that in a film like a Marvel film, but I just thought it's an interesting one to potentially open it out to the I'll open it out to you guys first, just in terms of what direction do you go with in that scenario. Like, if you're Marvel right now, do you stay true to the comics? Do you introduce something else? Do you make something, do you make the lore something else? Like, invent a past trauma for him to draw from? What do you guys think?
I will say, I'm not I'm not the biggest X-Men expert, but if I remember correctly, even as far back as the 80s, there was a thing about Magneto where he would age slower than everyone else. Like, I think it was something, I think it was because he lived in the, I think he used to go down to the Savage Land or something. I forget what it was, but there was something, either it was his powers, some feature of his powers, or something that he had done that actually caused him to age physically slower. Because even as far back as the 80s, I mean, he'd be pretty old if he had lived through the Holocaust.
Yeah.
I think they started to introduce stuff to say that he just aged slower. And that's probably how I would do it. Maybe cast somebody in their 50s or 60s, but say that Magneto ages significantly slower than a normal person. They've done it for Nick Fury in various incarnations of the of the Marvel Universe. I think they did it in Ultimate Marvel. I think they've done it in 616 as well in the comics. So I would just say age him more slowly. For me, the Holocaust aspect of his character is very important. I think Jewish people are generally underrepresented in superhero-dom, and I think the fact that his history and heritage plays such a big role in shaping who he is, I think is very important, not just for representation, but also for the logic of the character.
Yeah.
I would just say age him slower, but keep him the same.
Yeah, and so you're basically saying find it like an in-world reason for this to happen.
Yeah.
Is what you would say.
Absolutely.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. I think that totally makes sense. I think I do. There is part of me that does have some slight quibbles in approaching some events like this, just with it being still recent in that there's people in the world who have still very much feeling the effects of something like that. I do think it's kind of an interesting thing where you've just got to make sure you're handling that particularly sensitively.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you wouldn't handle things sensitively anyway, but I think you're absolutely right. I think that keeping his Jewish heritage is really important for the character, but I'm always
What did you think of the depiction of, in both the first X-Men movie and in X-Men First Class, of his time at, I think he may have even gone to Auschwitz in the first X-Men movie?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's funny because you're making a piece of work ultimately for like entertainment as well as representation. And I wonder whether like a superhero movie is the best framework for it when we've got so many. You could clearly make this and shape this any way you like. You can, we don't necessarily have to draw from actual places necessarily. Like, it could have been a camp, but to like actually have it as Auschwitz, I don't know, like something in that kind of feels a little bit sticky for me, but that potentially could just be me being oversensitive. I'd actually loved, if anyone is a member of the Jewish community, which I'm not, I would love to know your take on it, because that's just how I see it from the outside. I think that if it was something that I knew had affected like my parents or my grandparents, you know, in such a horrendous way, I don't know how I would feel about it being portrayed in a, what is ultimately like a kind of like a, whilst serious, like a campy superhero movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, ultimately that's the sort of the general vibe of the of the film. So yeah, I'd be interested to hear from people about this one.
Unati, did you have something to add?
Well, I mean, what you guys said. I think if you're talking about like recasting a film, we want to maintain canon and we want to stay within the story arc, but you know, that for me is just solved very much with a date on the bottom of the film or 5 years earlier. I don't care, just tell this, like, it doesn't really bother me, just tell the story. Do you know what I mean? Like, whatever the story of that particular film is or whatever you're trying to focus on, just tell that section of the story.
Yeah,
and
stay
I'm
true
fine
to the story.
Like, it's okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's X-Men.
X-Men has always had, though, a very strong correlation with real world events and issues.
Of course,
especially the Bryan Singer movies really brought out the relationship to the LGBT fight for equal rights, but rights in general as well.
Yeah.
And in the past, it's been, I think in the 60s, the big comparison was racism.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was written during the Black Civil Rights Movement in America.
Yeah.
Speaking as somebody who saw the first X-Men movie as a child, I remember the beginning being really scary, but also very effective. Like, because for those of you who haven't seen the first X-Men movie, which you should, it's a good movie. The first two, especially, very good movies.
X-Men 2.
Yeah, X-Men 2 is amazing. But it opens with Jewish prisoners being taken into, I believe, Auschwitz. And one of those young prisoners, he's a young boy, is separated from his mother, and as she's taken away, he starts screaming and reaching out to her, because he wants his mother back, and as he screams and the stress gets to him, you see the metal gates start to, like, bend out to the point where he's literally, like, magnetizing himself, pulling himself towards the gates. There's, like, four dudes trying to hold him back, and he's dragging them all, and the gates are getting all ripped out and deformed. Yeah. But it's explicitly framed as a motivation for Magneto's mentality, which is that he has witnessed the horrors of what happens when people decide that another group of people must be eliminated and are a threat. Mm. And in his opinion, if he could easily see that happening to mutants, and he sees it happening all around him. So his whole idea is, well, let's eliminate them before they can eliminate us. He's essentially Killmonger before Killmonger.
Yes. I was literally just thinking about that comparison. Mm. And I think actually you kind of refreshing me as well on that first. It kind of really clearly illustrates Lord Errol's point, which is just that it is such a fundamental core of that character. Like you've illustrated it so well there that like it's such a perfect metaphor for his struggle that that potentially then it is. It is really important that this character is rooted in something sort of historical and sort of of that scale. Do you know what I mean? I guess because it's also about the scale of this thing, right? That drives Magneto specifically. Extermination as opposed to just.
Also could be interesting though, and this would be an alternate. This would either be like an alternate version of the X-Men, or like if there were just like tons of Jewish representation in the Marvel universe. Mm. If you were to transplant Magneto's story to another culture that has undergone some horrific event, perhaps in the 20th century, so like say it was somebody, you could say he was a Japanese child during World War II when the U.S. dropped the atom bombs, or you know. Somebody in Vietnam who saw what happened there. There's any number of really interesting events that if you wanted to try and diversify. But I think the key is that he's someone who, granted, I have not read comics where his explicit, like, I don't know if he is himself a practicing Jewish person by faith. I just know that he's Jewish by ethnicity. But you wanted to keep the core of a person who was shaped by a horrific large-scale trauma who now wants to avoid that same kind of trauma happening again.
Yeah. Then there are other events. There's unfortunately lots far too many options.
Lots of trauma going around. There's plenty of trauma going around. It's all good.
Yeah.
Hey Halflings, quick aside here. After recording this episode, we decided it'd be a really good idea to reach out to someone of Jewish heritage, as we got into a lot more things than we actually anticipated doing. So, this is my friend Abe and his take on the whole scenario.
Hello, I'm Abraham. I went to drama school with Jasper, where he bullied me every day of my training. No, I'm just... On this subject, it's a really interesting subject, and I do have an opinion on it, and that is that I would definitely want it to stay Jewish and be played by a Jewish actor if possible. I think that's cool. You know, why not get Harrison Ford in? You know, just like to also say, you know, I think being Jewish is not a religion. It's there's a guy, Rudy Rockman, on YouTube, who I really like, but he describes it as a portable suitcase. Being Jewish of your, you know, your ethnicity, your religion, your language, you know, food, all kinds of things. It's many, many things all in one thing. But you know, the religion is just, you know, a little part of that. So it's an ethnicity. That's what it is. And I think it would be great to cast someone who's actually Jewish this time, if possible. They've cast two people now who aren't Jewish. much as I love Ian McKellen and Michael Fassbender, I think that'd be wicked, and I think it's great to tell those stories. You know, it's not, you know, these tragic, terrible events did happen, and we should keep remembering that they happened, because it doesn't take long before you get is saying they didn't happen or they weren't so bad, and that's the really scary thing. So I think it's really important that we keep saying, yeah, these terrible things did happen. We lost so many, and you know, I personally lost family, and I know so, you know, you can't really talk to any Jews not lost family, really. It's important to talk about, and I think it's very, I don't think it's sort of like upsetting or devaluing to have that story in a superhero film. It's exciting and empowering to think, wow, someone as powerful as, you know, Magneto, and he's Jewish, you know. You think, oh, well, you know, I've got that sort of strength in it, you know, kind of echoes of the Golem and all those extraordinary Jewish tales of strength as well. You know, it's great. It's great, and that's my opinion on it. Thanks for asking me.
So thank you very much, Abe, for sharing your opinion on this subject. As for the claims of bullying, I have no further comments, Your Honour. But without further ado, let's get back into this episode of Three Black Halflings.
So I hope, Lord Errol, that we've covered what you're asking there. Feel free to send us more questions. We love getting questions. It's really nice that people are engaging with our show, and it's making them think about stuff like this. As mm-hmm. for what we're getting into today, we recently have seen lots of new juicy information about Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, whilst obviously getting really, really excited. Because there's loads of stuff coming in this. We've got classes, we've got races, backstories, loads and loads of stuff. But something that we have actually sort of touched on in a previous episode, which is when Wizards released that statement saying that they were going to eliminate minuses to racial traits, and that they were going to make backstories more flexible. They have now introduced this lineage idea in the Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. And the idea would be that you can change those racial traits around and take certain bonuses from other places so that you can have a more specific sense of background and story. And they've also done some changes, I believe, to the group patron mechanic, which allowed you to have some a party backstory, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I just thought this was a really interesting place to start when we're talking about Tasha. I'm sure we'll end up talking about Tasha's Cauldron of Everything a lot more on the show, because there's, again, so much to go into. But I thought this would be a really good place for us to start, because it's something that we've talked about on the show as being something that would be really useful for people to increase diversity and to help introduce new people to Dungeons & Dragons who, again, much like us, didn't really feel a kinship with the elves or the dwarves, but then didn't want to play as an orc because they get minuses to their intelligence and things mm-hmm. like that. So, and actually being able to then genuinely play like an orc sorcerer, for instance, because you can change so you can have a charisma bonus instead of a
strength bonus.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought it'd be interesting for us to open this out to you guys. What was your sort of first reactions to this and how they've done it? Is there anything that like interests you? Like, are you thinking of builds now that you could potentially, you've never been able to do? I'd love to, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, good, excellent, well done. Should have been done many moons ago. But thank you. No, I'm joking. Thank you. No, like, I think, yeah, that's exactly a step in the right direction. Jokes aside and rinsing aside. I'm excited. I just ordered my hard copy today because I do like a hard copy. It'll arrive on the 17th of November.
Very exciting.
So I just want to have one of those. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being more sort of tactile with sort of characters' backstories and features now, and not necessarily because like you know you want to you want to pick a class or you want to pick a race, but then your bonuses just don't quite match up to, you know what I mean? Like, they don't just quite, they don't quite match up with what you're trying to do.
And it plays such a big part of the mechanics.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. So I'm quite interested. I'm really excited to have a batch of kind of going, oh, I can make something like really specific and quite nuanced and quite detailed the way I want it to be.
When did it first hit you guys how much the race influenced how your character would play? Like, in terms of the racial bonuses influencing your actual ability scores, when did it first hit you guys just how much of an impact that event that can eventually have?
Do you know, I think it was... wasn't necessarily that. I think it was actually relatively recently when I was making a character for Ryan's game, Jeremy.
Yeah,
the aforementioned Ryan. He gets mentioned every episode. shout out.
He of the. Yeah.
I was making a character for his game, and I was like, I really wanted to play this Minotaur, and I had this all these things in my head, and then I was like, that's just not gonna play very well. And, like, I suddenly became, you know, I was sort of getting really hardcore into, like, oh, I want to, like, min-max a character. I want to try and, like, make them as, you know, powerful as possible. I want to be able to do loads of damage because I normally play rogues who just do damage.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I don't want to leave that behind. I don't want my warlock to just be able to do, like, 10 hit points a round. I want to, you know, I was being greedy. And so I was suddenly like, oh, that's really annoying that I can't build this character, because I don't think this character is unbelievable. I don't think this character is like ridiculous. It's not like I'm building some sort of superhero out of the box type thing. I'm building a logical character. He's just a Minotaur that studies a lot and is very studious about, you know, his learnings and stuff. And that it was never going to be able to play the way I wanted it to, which was actually really really frustrating.
Yeah.
So probably quite recently for me.
For me, I mean, sort of similarly to, you, Jasper, because also I like to play rogues who just do all the damage, like rogues or fighters. So it only like kind of cottoned on when, again, I wanted to dabble in spellcasting. That's when I kind of noted it and I was like, okay, that's really going to give me a hard time if I don't actually like match this right. So that was the first time I've kind of noticed. It was when I decided to dabble in spellcasting.
Well, I think that rogues generally, I think, I mean, you guys can push back if you think this is wrong, but I think they're generally one of the easier classes to dive into, in the sense that they're quite sort of straightforward, in a sense that they don't have like a bajillion different options, but they've got sneak attack, which can do great damage. Do you know what I mean? And I think we've become very accustomed to like what a rogue is in like general fantasy and
archetypes.
I would say for somebody who's familiar with the genre, that's definitely one of the easier ones to hop into.
And then you sort of jump from, and then I think that and it's one of the less restrictive, I think, because you know, you can have good strength or you cannot. It doesn't really, it's not too impactful.
Yeah.
The only thing really is dex, but generally everyone wants to have good dex because that's your initiative bonus and stuff. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like it's a pretty universal class, whereas others are like really restricted if you don't want to go down that path.
Yeah.
You know, of do you know what I mean? If you're like playing like a wisdom based orc or something, it's just so hard because you're not going to get any wisdom bonuses, you know.
You're getting no help.
What about you, Jeremy, though? I'm interested because I feel like you've that's definitely been a moment. I feel like there's a moment for you, surely.
I think it was when I think it was while I was DMing when I really started to see just how much different stats would affect a character, specifically like a couple of, in my main campaign, a couple of the characters, because I didn't really understand when I first started DMing how each of the stats would impact a character. Some of them had relatively low constitution. One of them, the ranger, had a minus to constitution. I had no idea just how much of an issue that would eventually become with her health just being pitifully low. And then I started to look into like, oh, wait a minute. almost none of these people are getting racial bonuses that actually assist their abilities.
Yeah.
Like the abilities that they actually use.
Yeah.
The Ranger was like, I think the Ranger was trying to use like a Warhammer. So it's a strength-based weapon, but she's a gnome. So she gets bonuses to like dexterity and stuff.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The elf was an Eladrin, so, and I think the I think she was a variant Eladrin, and so she's a druid, and she didn't get a wisdom bonus. Her wisdom was kind of low for a character of her level. The only one who actually had really, really high stats was the Minotaur, who was playing a barbarian. Because he gets a plus to strength and charm.
Because he was a chunky boy,
exactly. So it was like, okay. Yeah. And then when I started to look into characters myself and building more characters myself, it would be like, oh, yeah. It actually is demonstrably weaker if I go with this race.
And also, like, you know, again, jokes aside, but I think Unati, you kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, it kind of baffles me that it's taken so long to get to this point, because the whole point for me of D&D is about freedom. It's about creativity. It's about, you know, and so how much does it suck that you then had a party of adventurers who had all made really unique and interesting characters, which were getting constantly penalized by the game
for being creative,
because they weren't playing it right.
Yeah.
Doing air quotations for playing it right, because there's no way to play it right. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That's so annoying. Yeah. And then I think you add on top, going back to like our original point with this, you add on top the racial thing, which I do think, you know, especially after that conversation with James, the amount of times I think about that conversation with James and I think, man, I did not think about how deeply some of these things have affected me.
Yeah.
Because of how intrinsically connected I am to fantasy as a genre and as a... It's like what I assimilate with. It's what I... it's like almost every single time I drift off when I'm sat down and I start imagining, you know, me as running around doing something cool, it's almost always in that kind of like, you know, Lord of the Rings-esque world or whatever, but I'm never an elf. I'm never a dwarf in my mind. I'm always a dragon or a something, just because it's different. And do you know what I mean? And so I think I generally think it's going to be really, really liberating, especially for new players to come in and be like, and have all this customization available. Because you can still play it.
That's important to stress. It's optional. They say it in the releases. This is all optional. You do not have to play the game this way.
Yeah.
But you can now, officially.
Yeah.
And I think that it will allow inexperienced players to play what they want to play and not be left behind by more experienced players. Because I don't think there's anything worse than feeling like you come into a table and you're like, or I actually haven't played as much as these guys, and they're all doing these amazing moves every turn where they've doing a stupid amount of damage and they've coupled these spells together. And do you know what I mean? And I don't really... Mm-hmm. And I think anything we can do to like level the playing field so that new players can feel like, oh, yeah, I can see how this works. You can put the building blocks together. I think is absolutely like a massive plus.
Yeah.
For sure.
One thing I found really interesting, I guess not to spoil anything, but some of the language they were using in this, where they were talking about you can find a template that you can use to create a lineage that's not directly connected to a typical race and background, or to typical race and background options. It's actually very similar to what the very recently released, as of us recording this, Wagadu setting yeah. information.
Which literally where, uses lineages.
Yeah, exactly. That's the exact word they use. They don't even use races. Everyone is human, but you can be of a different lineage that will give you different abilities and a different appearance and essentially a different culture in many cases.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think that's really interesting that they're allowing this kind of flexibility now in D&D, or yeah. officially from Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, and I think that the I think again, just getting away from using words like race and whatever, it's just when I think we always have to, we're always leaning into the idea that D&D is this escapism for people, and I think you, like language is a really it can be a really like a sticky issue and can absolutely be the thing that turns someone away from playing the game. Do you know what I mean? If someone's got some really negative connotations about like, oh, what race are you? If someone like comes at me with that question, I'm already like, ha, I don't want to.
Oh, you're getting
that.
Backhanded.
Do you know what I mean?
You're getting backhanded.
But do you know what I mean?
So
but like, that's a perfectly normal question for a DM to say, right, okay, what race are you?
Yeah.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
But I'll still so backhand
think,
you.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, so I think it's just like anything we can do to get away from that, like, which is why I much prefer like the idea of species. Yeah. I much prefer the idea
folk.
Of folk. Yeah,
lineage.
Folk is a great one. Lineage, all this kind of stuff I think is much, much better than just get away from these real world connotations. We're in a place where you can shoot fireballs from your hands and portals open up from the ground. Like, it's fine to not use the word race. Yeah. It's not gonna break the game.
I just want to note that it's 2020, right? I've got the same time as everybody else. do I have the same times? Okay, cool. Okay.
All right.
No,
looking at my phone here.
We're all back here in 1950s. That's what we're doing. Like,
yeah. Looking at my phone here, it does appear to, in fact, be September of 2020.
It does indeed.
Excellent.
Let's hope we release this episode in September, otherwise this is going to sell.
We release it in February of 2022.
But they'll be like, whoa, Tash is really, like, that's like some old sort. We're on 6E, guys.
Late to the party here, guys.
Oh, dear. I really wanted it as well, group patron mechanic. I hadn't even heard of this, and I've been doing a bit of like research before because I'd never really looked into Eberron before.
Yeah, beyond the races, I guess.
Before, yeah, exactly, beyond the races. And so I just I thought it was quite interesting, the idea of having a group sort of backstory, kind of coming in with a sense of companionships and friendships, because it's always a bit of a weird thing when you start a campaign and you've got five characters that have to basically decide to stick together forever in like in the first session. It's
really
always
tried.
Super sticky and weird, and you just kind of forget it happens. Like, you're like, oh, we'll get there, it's cool.
You have to jump through some major hoops to try and make that happen organically.
Mental gymnastics.
It's tricky, and like I really haven't, like, as a DM, like, if anyone's got any tips, I'm more than happy to receive some tips, because it's difficult. It's really difficult. So for me as a DM, I'm really excited by this, because I think even if you could say you had four players, you could easily say, like, why don't two of you come up with like a group backstory? You know what I mean? Like almost like, so you're like two groups of people. That's a much easier meld than like, do you know what I mean? Then there's history and there's like, you know, and I think also there's like conflicts, like more natural conflicts. I one of the things I really enjoy about the campaign that we're all in together is there's actually quite a lot of like inter PC conflict. It never quite comes to blows, but I enjoy that because I think it enriches our play, because it's not just me, it's not just like player versus DM all the time. It's like, no, I've got these goals and you're currently getting in the way of that goal, or you've got in the way of that goal. And I think that should be happening at the table, and I think that creating conflicts like that, you know, this
there
could
should
be
always be
conflict.
The looming threat of PvP.
Yes, of PvP. They're basically in our campaign. It is always
there has been PvP in our campaign.
Oh yeah, there has.
On one occasion. Well,
but exactly, that was created because I tried to force a new player came into the campaign, and you guys just were like, nope.
Yeah. Can we tell a little tale from the table on this?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay, so we had this. There was already kind of a core three, like group of three characters.
Yes.
One of them being my character, Dennis Colespring. And we had made friends with an NPC who's actually Jasper's first ever PC that he had ported over to this game, Lamora Canthus. And
Lamora Canthus.
We had just woken up, and Lamora had been mysteriously murdered. Now, my character, Dennis, based on the evidence, thought that it may have actually been him who did it, that he was possessed in his sleep and had killed Lamora.
Yes.
But there wasn't really an opportunity to address this with our friend Johnny's character, Jinx, who was, like, best friends with Lamora previously. Yeah. And we had, like, he found out that Lamora was dead, Jinx did, and immediately wanted to go after this ship that was coming into the harbor. Dennis is, like, fully trying to support this because he's like, I'm going to have to tell him, but not right this second because this is just not the time. We have things to do. So Dennis is planning on telling him later. Then this new dude rocks up, this tabaxi Sherlock Holmes guy, Wildspark, rocks up out of nowhere, acting full on like he's like a meaner version of the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, literally.
Really mean. Knows information that, from my character's perspective, he shouldn't be able to know, because my character has like a really secret, he comes from a very secret society of people that apparently this guy knows about, immediately raising my character's suspicions. He's just casually being a jerk to everyone. And then when we go to try and take out this ship, he tries to get in our way, which my character is like, okay, no. Because he's fully, he's considering like, Jinx is mad, we got to take these people out, and now I got this new dude who I can't even trust who's trying to stop him. Nah. So I fully attacked his character.
I will also state this for our audience, that there was definitely some guilt on Dennis's part, because he had decided to wander off into the day before that Lamora was killed, he wandered off into the creepy part of town, which is clearly full of creepy people walking around in white robes. He walks up to a door, some
on this guy... podcast, creepy people in white robes carry so much more weight.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. But yeah, but exactly. But either way, still, even at that point in the game, there was still more black people in that session than there was white people. So like, it was clearly, I was clearly giving this as a red flag. Like, don't go here.
It was a reconnaissance mission that I handled very poorly.
Very poorly.
Essentially.
And basically,
and so there was a lot of guilt.
He ended up going up to this door, knocking on the door. This literally like decrepit, like withered looking man answered the door in a white robe, was like, yes. Like this. And he was just like, I was wondering what's going on here.
I think I offered to join. I think that was what it is. I asked if I could join.
And then you said, can I join? And he was like, yes, but we require your blood. And he was like, okay. And just
no, he didn't even say. He just said, let me see your hand. So I held it out and he took some blood from
my
hand.
And then he took some blood away from him. And
then it was like an idiot just held out my hand.
Literally let him do it or whatever. And then remember him literally, and then straight after that, the old guy just closes the door, doesn't say a thing, and Dennis was just left in the street and was just like, well, I'm sure that's gonna be fine.
And then the next day
they wake up and their like best friend has been murdered in his sleep.
Yeah. And that's why I thought my character had been possessed. I fully attacked Wildspark. If it hadn't been for Jasper's intervention, I probably would have killed the game. Like, I probably would have just straight up tried to kill him.
Yeah, well, because the other party members were on your side, so I think that it would have resulted in a PC death, which would have been hilarious. So yes, I think anything that we can do, like the group patron in Tasha's Cauldron Everything, is very useful to avoid this scenario.
Yes, very much so.
I was actually kind of thinking, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and they've also expanded the rules for NPC sidekicks.
Yeah.
I was like, and actually I was kind of thinking, what might be quite nice with this is I feel like this is definitely a way of potentially introducing more like cultural and like personal story as a player. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because you could be traveling with like your son, you could be traveling with a servant, you could be traveling with, do you know what I mean? Like there's so many, I was like, I suddenly was like, oh, so many awesome ideas for what that could be. And in terms of like, even just in terms of like you wearing the same clothing, and do you know what I mean? Like from where you've come from, and I just thought, I was like, that's actually really cool. I found
out about sidekicks earlier this year. I played in a game where somebody played as a sidekick because their main character had this character as a sidekick, but their main character was too high level for this campaign, so they were like playing as the sidekick.
Aww, that's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
That's really cool.
I
think though someone was saying as well, like the sidekicks, they I don't know, you can guys correct me, you know more probably than I do, but like they have like different classes. They have like more pedestrian classes for them. And I was like, I kind of want to just play as like a normal townsfolk person and just just run Not screaming even... from like CR, like half CR monsters.
Yeah, you just have like a commoner stats
with 10 hit points and nothing above a 10 stats. On my stats. Like,
And I think they had released a UA that had like alternate class options, like different class abilities and stuff that you could get. That they'd released that like last year, and it had like alternate spells for some classes, alternate abilities. Like I think instead of instead of the barbarian's ability that allows them to have advantage on dex saving rolls against effects they can see, they could pick something else, and it like allowed for a lot more customization. I think that could be in here as well. So that'd like be cool. I think one that jumped out at me was that the druid finally gets revivify.
Yeah.
Which stood out to me because the druid in my campaign is the only primary caster.
Like healer,
and so
yeah,
she's
yeah.
just having to carry this team in terms of healing and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh, that would be so helpful.
That'd yes. be so useful. Yay.
Yeah, that would be really, really useful. There's some I know we sort of said we're going to get into this a later point, but there are some really crazy subclasses in this, which mechanically really change up some of these classes. Some of the psionic subclasses.
Yeah.
Like pretty much every, I think normally like every class pretty much is getting like some version. Not everyone, but
stuff.
but there's a lot of them that are getting this psionic subclass, which is kind of like a points based subclass. Allows you to get
it ties in with the feat.
Yeah. Yeah, so sort of that's really exciting to me as well. Just again, I'm all about telekinesis and being able to throw stuff with my mind. Like that's all I've ever wanted to do. So that's
really
fine.
Cool.
It is really cool.
Yeah. I just want to play all the rogues. That's what all the rogue subclasses.
And there's like the rogue subclasses in this look so
crazy. I just want to play every single last one of them.
I really hope they bring back there was a UA spell called Psionic Blast. That was like, I think I only found out about it because bards could get it, and it did like, it's a third level spell that could do like 5d8 damage. Ooh, it's basically turning Cone of Cold into a third level spell.
Wow. Without a elemental attachment as well. So like,
it was psychic damage.
Yeah, that's
it
what I mean. Less things are likely to be resistant to that than... Nothing
exactly.
worse than when you've got like, this is my big spell, Fireball, here it comes. It's like, oh, they're immune to fire. Great. that's marvelous.
Yeah, it was. I loved that spell. And then they took it off of D&D Beyond, which I guess means that it's going to potentially show up in some form in this book.
Yeah, there was also the one that I'm really excited for is I'm going to have to obviously do some more reading on it, but there's a... there's like a clockwork sorcerer. I'm like, because I was already like a big fan of a lot of the like Dunamancy like time stuff. Like, I just want a really cool Doctor Strange build, and I feel like that's gonna let me do it.
Yeah, or Dr. Manhattan even.
Yeah, or even exactly. I haven't yet found. I've always been really interested in the idea of making like a full like nuke. Sorceress class, like where like it maybe takes a few turns to like build up to like the Hail Mary, but when you get it, it's like, you know, like end of combat type thing.
Yeah,
I've always been like, I've always wanted that. Like, I don't know if I brought up on the show before, but I found the someone had homebrewed Saiyans as a class.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like they homebrewed it that you basically get that spirit bomb is like a level 9 spell or something.
It's so cool.
But basically what it was that you take for every turn that you stay charging it up or whatever, you got like 3d10 of damage added to it. And that was it. You can, and every turn you can expend like key points, because they're basically like a variation on the monk thing. Yeah. So you get key points, which lets you access your all of your abilities. Mm-hmm. And then your allies can use their bonus action. They can surrender their bonus action to basically give Lemmy your energy and like feed into the spirit bomb.
I love
like
that
extra
so
d10s. And I was like, and I basically looked at like, if you did about 3 turns with your allies helping out occasionally, you'd get up to like 25, 30 d10s of damage. And I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's like it's the closest you can get to really being DBZ in a Dungeons yeah. and Dragons.
In Dungeons and Dragons. And I was like, that's awesome.
And they had Kaioken and different Super Saiyan levels.
Yeah. Oh, it would just be so. And I love the idea of like, because I feel like it's like, I think that would generally introduce a level of strategy. Like, if you came up against a Tarrasque, like, that would be the Hail Mary at the end. Do you know what I mean? Like, that would be the thing that you'd have to, like, protect the Saiyan! Do you know what I mean? Just yeah. so that he can build this thing up, and we might actually be able to take, like, a chunk of hit points. Because otherwise...
You have everyone in the city giving you energy.
Yeah, literally. Like, that's what it is. Like, that's what it would be. Like, because otherwise you'd be so screwed.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking one of the things I do really want to do is like a really high level. Maybe after Tasha comes out, we should look at doing a really high level game. Because I would really love to. I just want to fight a Tarrasque just to know how bad it is.
Really,
I'm a glutton.
Really,
I'm a glutton.
You just
want to
put yourself through
punishment.
Through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really strong.
They're really strong.
They fought one on NADPOD, and like on that show, they have all kinds of overpowered items, right. And they still had multiple divisions of troops helping them to kill it.
Jeez, wow. It's nuts. And like, I'm so glad. Like the third edition. I was looking at the third edition version of the Tarrasque, and it's even crazier. Like, it doesn't die, it just burrows down into the earth and recharges, and then knows, and it's something like, it literally says in the description, like, it knows who killed it, or, like, who hurt it, and,
what?
Like, seeks them. I was like, what? So you kill the Tarrasque, it
excellent.
Disappears under the ground for, like, 30 days, and then it comes back to hunt you down.
It's horrifying.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad.
The Tarrasque is John Wick. It is Baba Yaga.
Kill the Tarrasque's puppy. Imagine
Tarrasque, I'm back.
I'm back.
The Tarrasque is just holding a giant pencil.
someone it please kills draw you with a pencils and books.
A giant Tarrasque with. Oh my god, a giant Tarrasque holding a pencil.
Oh my gosh. We should do one where we're all famous action stars.
Oh.
So like somebody's John Wick and somebody's I don't even know, John McClane.
Oh.
John McClane would be so outmatched by John Wick, but you could be somebody else.
Everyone would be so outmatched by John Wick. You know, like, he's being John
I'm
Wick
gonna
already.
Okay, so yeah, that's decided.
Already
I just want all the guns.
You know,
I just
he's already called John Wick.
I just
there's
want,
there's yeah. other unstoppable tough like Judge Dredd.
I know, yeah. but Judge it's just all of those guns, man. It's just all those guns.
Oh no, I'm saying Jasper. I'm speaking this for Jasper. I'm trying to console Jasper now that he can't be John Wick.
No, he can be. No, you can be John Wick. We can share.
No, it's cool. It's cool. I've got there's plenty.
You can't have John's Wick, guys. You can only have one John. The John's Wick. The brother's Wick.
The brothers Wick. No, I don't know. Who would I?
It's like this
who would I be?
A stupid
who is like
the, movie?
Who is like? I'm
sorry, I'm just imagining the brothers Wick. It's like a really dumb, like just a title. Doesn't even divorce from the John Wick series. It just sounds like a really terrible kids movie. The brothers Wick.
It would be so bad. It would be so bad.
We've been burning the candle at both ends.
Oh my god, he had to do it though. Like, it was there.
He had to do it.
He didn't have to though. Like, it was there. He could have left it alone. Could have left it alone, but no, he had to go there.
Had to. He can't help it.
I love it.
I'm thinking maybe like Arnie and Predator. That might be my.
That would be fun.
I feel like that. Or maybe that's my time for
John
my blade
Rambo.
Build.
Yeah.
Rambo for sure. Maybe a Jean-Claude Van Damme. I could go for a monk class and just kick the hell out of everything.
Yeah.
That'd be sick. Everybody's playing an action hero named John.
So everyone.
John Wick, John McClane, John Rambo. Of course.
I'd have to be a monk class and I'd have to be Bruce Lee. That would be
awesome.
That'd be awesome. Sick. Yeah, like just screaming my way into like every combat, like playing ping pong with nunchucks, like
you name it.
That would be amazing.
A Bruce or Jet Li monk, just you'd have to min-max the crap out of him, like, because he would need to be like dexterity 20, like he would, like, you know what I mean? Like, and
it would be like legendary levels, so it would be like how some like barbarians can get strength above 20. It would be like that. You guys would be like boosted beyond.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say you could do those, like you could have like those epic boon feats where it's like you get a +5 to dexterity or something stupid,
because these are like legendary characters.
Man, that would be amazing. Literally,
send
like
us a message on Twitter if you would like to hear.
If you want to hear
all action hero,
an all action hero legendary level like characters.
Yeah,
man, I want to play it. So
I really want to play it.
Much.
I'm just gonna.
Jeremy, who's
John
yours?
John Wick meets Bruce Lee.
Who are you playing?
I'm trying to think. Most of my favorite action heroes aren't as strong as those guys. I might go like John Rambo just to mix things up. Because he's more of like a ranger type.
Yeah,
that could be fun. And like, he lays a lot of traps and stuff. However, we did. Oh man, we watched.
Oh, you know, you know who I would be? You know who I would be? Chev Chelios from the Crank movies.
Jason
Statham from the Crank movies.
Oh,
that's who I would be. And I do the accent the whole time.
dude, that just makes me think of him in the in Meg. Oh my god!
Yes, I love that. Oh, he's my favorite part of that.
Honest to God,
I was thinking. You know what I was thinking of? I was thinking the spy movie that he was in. Never mind. I haven't seen the Meg.
Oh, you should. The Meg is so stupid. I love it. Me and Jade went to go and see it and literally had the best time. We lived our best lives watching that film. It was so dumb. It was so dumb and I love it. And literally, like, the best, we literally quoted it for weeks afterwards because, like, there's a first bit where he's, like, on a submarine. And like, you know what's gonna happen because the film's called Meg after Megalodon. And he's on this submarine and you suddenly, obviously, it goes doosh, like this, and like the wee alarm starts going off and the camera at breakneck speed just whoosh, zooms into his face and he just goes, what? Honestly, we just went in the cinema. It was so funny. And like, honestly, the pan in is so quick.
That's one of my favorite words in British English is the word what. Because like it reaches what? A level where it stops being a word and just becomes whoop. Oh.
Yeah, that's still, yeah. It's still...
People will literally be like, whoop.
I do it all the time. I do it all the time.
It's so common. I love it.
Yeah.
So just Jason Statham going, what?
Honestly, I feel like I need to make a GIF of that moment for this show. It's so glorious.
Yeah. Chev Chelios, John Wick, and Bruce Lee. Not even one of Bruce Lee's characters, just Bruce Lee the person.
Just Bruce Lee. Yeah. Just Bruce Lee. Because Bruce Lee was like, anything, they made him look weaker in the films to add a sense of peril.
Yeah.
As far
exactly.
as I'm like, Bruce Lee, yeah.
Carrying the skull of Chuck Norris.
Yes!
I swear to God, if I came across Chuck Norris in that game, I would like put my foot through that guy's chest, like back away, like you would die in this fight a million times. Brilliant. Anyway, this has been another episode of Three Black Train Wrecks.
This episode lost all direction after a certain point.
So this has been another episode of Three Black Train Wrecks. I hope you've enjoyed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Oh god, we're gonna go pull ourselves together. And I'm gonna go edit this and get it ready. But I hope you've enjoyed it.
Did you have
it.
Something to add, Unati? It sounded like you were going to say something.
No, I was just wondering. I'm going to have to go talk to my therapist about why I'm very soothed by like the sound of falling bullet shells. I don't know why that. I don't know why that. Like the thought of that really calms my soul, and that means there's something wrong with me. Because that's not okay.
It's a way to express yourself. It's all good.
Let's have a talk about this.
Yeah,
not now.
We're gonna go
later.
We're gonna go off there and have a chat about this. It's about that time in the episode where we go ahead and thank some of our incredible new patrons. We've had quite a few since our last, since we launched and since our last episode. So just wanted to extend our eternal thanks and gratitude to the following people. First up, the OG from this very episode who sent us the question, Lord Errol himself.
Woo! And then I would like to thank Lance. Woo!
Yeah.
Woo! I would like to thank Leah.
Woo!
And then next up we've got Rob.
Woo! And thank you, Rob. And Elena. Thank you so much, Elena. A lot of love for you, Elena. Peace, peace. Woo!
Thank you, Elena. Thank you, Elena. Thank you, Elena. I would like to thank Tank for also having Tank. One of the coolest names of any of our patrons.
Thank you, McTankson.
And I should say, Tank sent us a really lovely message. He generally struggles to listen to... He put this on Twitter, so I'm sure he won't mind me sharing. But he said he struggles to listen to podcasts sometimes because he has ADHD and it's a lot. But he said ours really broke through and makes him smile, which I just thought was really beautiful.
Thank you, Tank.
Thank you, Tank. It's an incredible compliment for you to pay us.
Yeah. I'm going to take that to the bank, Tank. Thank you.
Take it to the bank, Jeremy. And then last but by no means least, we have Kate. Kate W. Sith. I really hope your last name is Sith, because that is so, so dope.
Yeah.
Please let us know if your name is truly Sith, because that's really cool.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, Halflings, for listening to this most recent episode. We will be back next week. And don't forget that this Saturday, so next Saturday, we will be doing a session 2. Episode 2 of Wargadu. So that is the 10th of October, and it'll be kicking off at 7:30 BST. So make sure you're there on our Twitch stream for all of the Wargadu goodness.
It's twitch.tv/tbhalflings.
Yes, twitch.tv/tbhalflings.
There we go.
But there'll be links in this episode, etc., for you to click on. And if you hit follow, then you'll be automatically notified when we go live. We had a great time last time, and it's going to be super fun. So make sure you join us. So thank you very much, Halflings, and we shall catch you next time.
So long,
Shy Folk.
Bye.
Okay.